Hey, everybody. This is Tracy. No, it's not Tracy. It's Josh. But this is still Spiritual, Not Religious, the podcast. I'm a new co-host.
Yeah, you are. That's so cute, right?
That's Tracy. I'm Josh. Here we are, season 3, episode 2.
Oh, you, nice call. See, you're going to keep track of stuff like that.
I am. Every single episode. I'm going to keep a notebook.
Oh my God, a notebook. Yeah. Because now we can't talk. We were just saying earlier today, we can't talk about any of the cool stuff we want to talk about because they're like, go save it for the podcast, dude.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like a book club, right? Before everybody arrives, don't talk about the book.
Yeah. It's like Fight Club.
It is. Podcast Club.
Oh, that sounds lamer. Podcast. What? Oh, yeah. The cat.
I was distracted by the cat.
That happens a lot.
All right. Podcast, spiritual, podcast. Not religious. Let's jump right into the content.
Because last time we set it up, like what the content was going to be. And I'm going to have you start with that because it's kind of your world and I'm just living in it.
It's everybody's world that we're all living in.
Wow. That's true. That's some heavy stuff, man.
Isn't it though? So here we are. Two people recording a podcast being listened to by an unknown.
Up to 10, sometimes 14 individual people.
That's true. People. Listeners.
Mm-hmm. And your mom. Hi, Sally.
Sally. So here's the topic here. We've got Tracy's perhaps ongoing theme of a lot of mind-body personal growth, spiritual, not religious topics,
but not exclusive of religious topics. I like religion just fine.
I do too.
In my trailer, you know, my really cool trailer, maybe remember, I don't know if anyone listens to my trailer, but it basically says the thing about how I'm not against religion. It's spiritual. It's not, it's just that I picked spiritual, not religious as a title because it's one of those things that they put like as a category when you're defining yourself, spiritual, not religious. And I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Would you say that religion could be a category for a body of knowledge?
Sometimes. It's not knowledge.
But why would they even use the word body for a configuration of information?
Oh, I feel a segue coming on.
It's a total segue happening.
Oh, bring it, sir. Bring the segue about the body.
Well, gosh, it seems like everything has a container, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How do things get into a container?
Oh, really? Okay. I kind of want to support what you're doing here in like the spirit of improv, and I want to yes and what you're doing.
Okay, but I don't think you're going to.
No, I'm going to. But okay. I want to come back to this idea of things getting into a container later. But you go on.
Well, we can totally go here because everybody's got a body, and everything comes out of their body when they have some variety of behavior. Where does that behavior take place?
In space.
Yeah, there's a dimension to it, right?
People in space. Yes. You remember the Muppets? Show?
Pigs in space?
Pigs in space was some good stuff. Huh?
Yeah, it's true.
You know, we're just doing people. Bodies in space.
Tracy and I finished some yoga this morning.
Woohoo!
We did a little yoga class.
So if anyone thinks I just say to do yoga, but I don't really do yoga, at least one time I had a witness.
So we've got spiritual practices involving movement of the body.
Yes, that's true.
All the time.
That's true.
By the way, I want to acknowledge Tracy's assertion of doing yoga. It's a true thing. I witnessed it.
I was kind of behind you though, so you couldn't tell for sure. I just every time you'd kind of turn around, if you had to do a twisty motion, I'd like quickly, I'd get into like a yoga move.
Right.
The rest of the time I was on my phone.
Yeah, I know. We don't know. I wasn't looking.
You weren't looking. Yeah. Well, now I really was.
Well, you need to be able to perceive things by looking through space from your body at another body.
Damn, you're keeping good with this whole thing. Like you're using the material and you're keeping it in the theme.
I
love this. This is a good quality you have.
It's true. It's
one adorable.
Of my qualities.
You're so
and
cute.
It's enhanced by your complimentary sort of process here.
me observing the good stuff that you're doing, in other words, is helping to reinforce that you should continue doing the cool stuff.
It's almost as if the affirmation of another person's conscious behavior results in the solidifying of that behavior within that which is performing it.
Okay, you're going to have to break that one down, because that was a lot of words in my brain shorted out. Like, say it again.
Well, I'll say it in a way that I can't. That's a different way, because, improvisatory processes are locked in space.
Is that a word?
Improvisatory?
Yeah, improvisatory. Yeah, that's a word. I'll back it up. Keep going.
Well, I believe it was Mr. Green that committed the crime with the idea in the improvisatory.
He committed to the idea. Uh-huh. He committed to the idea. With the concept
in the improvisatory.
Oh yeah, nice. Yeah. Okay, keep going, man.
That's what happened. Well, you know, we had this abstract notion of bodies in space, because I was trying to build on my ideas of embodiment, which is kind of a hot buzzword in some circles, with some of the ideas of the mind body in terms of, here's my question for you. I was thinking about this, Tracy.
Woo-hoo.
You're familiar with Reiki, energy healing, correct?
Yep.
So how does the energy get from, does it come from you to the other person? What's happening there?
Do you really want to know what I think about this? Because it might not be in alignment with what you're trying to do. And maybe it will. I don't know.
That's why we have this dialogue, to realign things. Dialogue.
Okay, but this is a good question. Yeah. So buckle up. All right. Rather than the body being the vessel within which consciousness resides, I see it more as consciousness being the function, the phenomena that creates matter. Therefore, the consciousness creates the body. Mm-hmm. And so, and consciousness, what we refer to as consciousness as human beings who experience the phenomena that we call consciousness. We experience it in a certain way. And because we experience it in a certain way, we judge our experience of it against all other beings. And we say, oh, they don't have consciousness because they're clearly not experiencing it the way we are. And what I'm saying is that just because we experience it in our way doesn't mean that we are experiencing all that it is. In fact, we are not even experiencing it in our own interaction with consciousness doesn't even allow us to experience all that consciousness is. Case in point.
This might normally be where you would interrupt me with a lot of words happening.
Is that right?
It might be. But you were about to say case in point, weren't you?
Yeah, because I was going to talk about the autonomic nervous system.
Okay.
It's a really nice, but go ahead. Interrupt.
I just felt like I wasn't saying enough, so I had to say something.
Oh, wow. We are two peas in a pod. Okay.
What's the case in point, though?
No, seriously. Is it really that you felt that you weren't saying enough? Or is it that you had a question? Or was anything about what I was saying something that you didn't get?
I was kind of floating off in the explanation. But then I realized, right as you said case in point, you were about to anchor it back down. Anchor.
Oh, no. That needs to stop immediately. I'm kidding. Sorry. I'm totally kidding. Okay. I think it's super cute. Do I get more money when you mention anchor in the middle of the podcast? No. And yes, it's all just about the sweet, sweet penny per
case
listen
in point.
For me.
Case in point.
Autonomic nervous system. Like, we are not noticing it. We can influence it, like people have learned, like through biofeedback and things like that. You can interact with it. But when people can even interact with, for instance, lowering their blood pressure through conscious interaction or lowering their heart rate, everyone's astounded. You know, oh my goodness, you can do that? Many people are surprised that they're even able to do that, which itself is evidence of the fact that how automatic it is that we're actually surprised that we can use our minds to interact with it. Now, hang on one sec. So that is an example of how our consciousness is affecting us in ways that we're not even aware of how to actively or consistently affect our own consciousness. But anyway, so that's the case in point, that consciousness is bigger than us. Mm-hmm. And that's a simple example, but I'm saying that all matter, including the books on the bookshelf, including my car, including the sweater that's laying here on the floor, all of these things have the thing that is that we experience as consciousness is some sort of phenomena, some law of physics that mm-hmm. one of the ways that it can be experienced is through our sentience. Mm-hmm. But that's not the only way that it can be experienced. So when you say like the energy of thought or consciousness going mm-hmm. into a vessel, mm-hmm. I don't see it that way. I see it as the vessel being created by the phenomena that we experience as consciousness mm-hmm. and seen. Now your turn.
So people move through space.
Yes.
Do we move?
Seems that we do.
How does consciousness help us move through space, if at all?
Well, that's a whole other thing that some aspects of neurology mm-hmm. are questioning whether or not we have actual will or choice. But mm-hmm. I would say what you could say is that the assumption is that it is by choice and decision, mm-hmm. or like even if it's a somewhat subconscious decision, it's like I want to get mm-hmm. a cup of coffee, and then my body yeah. finds myself in the kitchen.
Remember, we both listened to this podcast the other day that talked about this concept of affordances, where you might be more likely to notice something if you happen to know it's something you can act on.
Is that called affordances?
Affordances.
And that was the thing about the apple. Like the uh-huh. apple, you don't notice what the apple is. You notice what mm-hmm. you would do with the apple. Mm-hmm. I would eat the apple. I would hold the apple. I would so forth. So that's called affordances. Those you know a lot of words.
Yeah.
I don't know that word.
So I like to think about this idea that space itself is an affordance. And our ability to move at all is the result of us being aware that we have the capacity to move through space. So we may not have, say, free will to control our own body somewhere, but our perceptual process recognizes that there is space to move through. So the space around us is like a gift to us that gives us the freedom of movement. So this is why I was asking.
Ooh, I just had like an impulse of like a thought experiment mm-hmm. of like if we couldn't move through space and we were all just squished together all the time, mm-hmm. that would suck.
Mm-hmm. You ever heard of how people that are autistic are comforted by having like squeezing kind of
if it's a certain amount of consistent, if it's not mm-hmm. inconsistent, if it's an inconsistent sense mm-hmm. of stable mm-hmm. pressure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I like to think that a lot of things that calm or give people comfort have to do with an affirmation of having freedom. So one of the things perhaps...
Okay, say it again.
One of the things that give people a sense of calm and comfort is also having a sense of freedom. You know, I work in a mental hospital. One of the things that creates the most anxiety for these people is the feeling of being trapped in the hospital, you know? Hmm. And having a sense of freedom really would give them a lot more sense of calm and safety. That's what they
are
want.
You sure though? Because I think you would have to basically, it may be that a person in that state of agitation would feel agitated in the hospital, but they would also feel agitated if they weren't in the hospital.
They're thinking that getting that freedom would give them a sense of comfort. It's like they're holding on to that idea that getting out of the hospital would help them feel more free, more relaxed. So the idea is it might not. True. They might get out there and be way worse. Or the same. So I ask myself sometimes in the attempt of trying to give them a sense of comfort, try to get a better understanding of what's uncomfortable about being in the hospital or something, just in a sense to try to provide them comfort. It's like trying to get them to understand how they feel about the container that they're in.
Okay. But just so I can make sure we tie this together. Mm-hmm. You were talking about the sense of comfort by being constrained in a very mm-hmm. specific way, like mm-hmm. the, you know, a holding machine like Temple mm-hmm. Grandin made or weighted blankets, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. and saying that that's comfort, and then you're saying the freedom is comfort. So mm-hmm. is that a contradiction?
It's a comparison between tactile, sensory holding in containers, along with another realm of containers that has to do with like feeling unwillingly, like you against your will, you have been constrained. So I'm just trying to build this idea of, in one sense, having a sense of tactile squeezing, comfort, or containerness can give people a sense of integrity. Whereas at the same time, when there's a container that's imposed upon a person, there's a sense of being trapped. And so I'm trying to develop this sense of freedom where you contrast the sense of being locked in versus the sense of being squeezed. It's like the sense of being hugged and embraced contrasted to the sense of being like trapped under a heavy weight, you know? Mm-hmm. These are ideas of like how the external space around, how it impinges upon our body can either give us a sense of freedom or safety. I mean, we're just going on to this idea.
Yeah, like freedom or safety freedom or unsafety.
Or unsafety, yes. Yeah, thank you. I mean, this is all leading into like bodies in space, but rather than thinking of open space, now we're thinking of constraining or comforting spaces. Because, you know, I dance tango, right?
I heard about it.
You've heard about it, you know?
You bring it up a lot.
I do.
Because you're pretty into it.
Yeah.
It's kind of your jam.
Yeah. Because it's one of the ways of understanding how bodies move together and intersubjective experiences are explored through that intimate shared movement.
At some point, I really want to, because I think it's fascinating that you, first of all, because I was like, did you, when you were you into this intersubjectivity and this idea of inactivism, and then you chose tango in order to explore that concept? And it was no, you started with tango, presumably for the same reasons that people did in the 20s and 30s, and we won't say why that was.
Sure. Divorced guy looking for a social thing, wanted to meet some gals.
Chicks love tango, which it turns out that you were surprised because some of the chicks are like, tango so hard to do. Okay. Yeah. I'm not talking about me right now. Hmm. Probably. But anyway, but it was the other way around. So you started out that way and then you went, what the heck? What's going on here? And I think that's really fascinating. Mm-hmm. I mean, you went down that whole path of philosophical inquiry from that. So at some point, put a pin in it. I want to deconstruct how you got from there to there. But anyway, so tango, proceed.
Yeah. Well, this is an idea because one of the best ways to understand, I think, bodies in space is to look at two or more bodies in contact with each other. I asked you about how bodies move or how consciousness helps people move. And so I was hoping to get some of your insight into this idea of this like global consciousness or maybe omnipresent consciousness and what happens when it's perceived as being embodied by two different people that have two different philosophies in life that make them think that this body is that body and it's not a shared consciousness unless someone has a certain life philosophy and they do think shared consciousness where the
other. But even then, people are mostly lying. I say if they say that they always sense that oneness, we can have these moments of oneness, of perceiving oneness.
It takes a ritual of some kind to maintain that sense of oneness, maybe a religious or spiritual ritual.
Yeah. And that's another topic, so many topics, but I like to talk about how spirit, like religion or ritual, what they do is they are the thing that we use to give ourselves permission to have experiences. But you could give yourself that permission without the ritual, but typically people like to. So the ritual isn't the thing that causes the experience. It's the process that people use to give themselves permission to have the experience.
Like the ritual of practicing Argentine tango gave me the opportunity to practice a sense of oneness that comes through a biomechanical artistic process of bodies, you know, being in contact, moving with each other. It's an example of that kind of thing.
It's profound. I think there's a whole thing that you are tapping into through the intersection of tango and philosophy that I I love that I don't get it, that it's not easy for me to comprehend, because I love it when I can't comprehend stuff.
You comprehend it intuitively, like the way that your nervous system is causing, or maybe not nervous, yeah, autonomic. Blood's pumping, there's a flow happening, there's a lot of movement, very intimate and complex movement that's taking place below our level of awareness, right?
Yeah, but I feel I do not yet feel fluid mm-hmm. in the process of learning tango. I feel inadequate. It's a mm-hmm. it's such a subtle form, and then also, yeah, it's a challenging form that is causing me to have to expand yeah. my ideas mm-hmm. about self, and I love that. And if it were easy, mm-hmm. well, then I would just put it over on this more stuff that's easy list. Mm-hmm. I'd rather be challenged, or at least mm-hmm. it turns out. Mm-hmm. Well, you're important to me, and tango is important to you, mm-hmm. and I want to be involved in it because of that. But it mm-hmm. it's not an automatic thing for me.
What's this idea about doing things before it's perfect or prepared? Mm-hmm. How does that relate to practicing something that's difficult?
Well, it relates to it in that I'm willing to try things I'm not good at. Because mm-hmm. a lot of times, one of the obstacles for those who, well, and Josh is referring to a sort of a basic tenet of my personal philosophy and what I teach clients to, is don't wait to be perfect before you try something. Don't wait to be perfect before you change. Don't wait mm-hmm. to, you know, that the process of learning something is the thing itself. It isn't that you succeed once mm-hmm. you get to the destination.
And it's limited perhaps by a sense of self-criticism, maybe.
Right. Like, and that's the thing. And yes, precisely. So if one self-criticizes to the point where they don't try new things, or they mm-hmm. say things, I'm too old now, or I'm this, or I'm that, or mm-hmm. or I'm not good at that, or I'm not creative, mm-hmm. which is a pet peeve of mine when people say mm-hmm. that. But so yeah, if you put this limitation on yourself that prevents you from having experience because mm-hmm. you think you have to, quote, be good enough to do it, yeah. then you don't get to live life. And so mm-hmm. it's a thing for me. It's a big thing for me.
So I have a follow-up question to that, because that part of me was asking that to understand some of the challenges maybe with doing tango with mm-hmm, me and, mm-hmm. you know, not feeling, you know, doing it and being non-judgmental and realizing you're not perfect because you're a beginner and just doing it anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So there's self-criticism that keeps people from doing it. But I'm wondering, from your standpoint, perhaps as a therapist, to what extent do people have to cope with, worry about other people's criticism of their performance conflicting with their own self-criticism? This is, again, continuing this idea of that there's almost embodied senses of criticism within people that are similar to our perceptual capacity. You know,
that's interesting. Well, yeah, I mean, I'd say one of the number one things that I help people with in my practice is the idea of worrying what other people think. It is just an absolute epidemic. Mm-hmm. That people are worried about what other people think. And I have cultivated a perspective in life that I do not let that drive my bus, but it would also be a lie to say that I never care about it. Mm-hmm. I'd say that I've narrowed the field of people whose opinions I will hold, you know, who I will allow to hold sway. And if I care about someone a lot, then their opinion mm-hmm. increases in for me mm-hmm. in its meaning, but it also then I'm challenged mm-hmm. to not allow it to still drive my bus. So for mm-hmm. instance, yeah, I worry if you'll think, oh, she's so bad at tango, mm-hmm. which is in that, but it doesn't, but I'm like, well, if he actually doesn't like me for not being good at tango, mm-hmm. then that's on him ultimately. And that's good mm-hmm. information that I can have. I'm not going to stop trying to do tango mm-hmm. because someone might criticize it. And then it, again, it's not like, then I take that when I'm in an evolved state of mind, I take that as, oh, well, that would be information about him that I would want to know. Like I would want to know if someone I care about disliked me because I wasn't good at tango, then I would go, okay, well, that is a feature of that person that I don't want to necessarily have. Yeah. So it's sort of a test. Like, it's like, I'm going to do my best and hopefully still be loved.
Yeah. Well, this is frequently what happens, I think, to people when there's a relationship between bodies. You know, one of the things with tango that happens is people embrace each other. And of course, Abrazo caminando. Walking embrace.
Abrazo caminando. Don't make that lip face.
I was making that. Do we continue to try to do Spanish?
Abrazo caminando. Oh my God. Okay, keep going.
Thank you.
Damn.
Oh my.
That was really good pronunciation, I think. Go on, Josh.
All right. So do people...
There is an embrace that happens.
Yeah. Do people fear abandonment, right?
Yes.
So we're fearing separation.
Yes.
So we're afraid of putting space between our bodies.
Yes.
Why?
Do you really want to... Okay. I don't know. Why do you think?
I think it has to do with attachment.
You know? Yeah.
It's this attachment to both a sense of comfort and an attachment to a sense of freedom. Like maybe the first sense of comfort we had was the freedom that was given by being utterly dependent on, say, our mothers.
Right.
You know?
A sense of freedom, yes, which is a freedom if the response from the parent is adequate, and a sense of panic if it is not.
Yeah.
Okay, hang on. All right, so let's wrap up today's episode because it's getting close to the time when we're our 30-minute episode, and then so let's set the intention for our next episode. What are we going to talk about next time, sir?
I think, since you and I are boyfriend, girlfriend, we're talking about tango, we're talking about embodied ideas, and we've discussed attachment and abandonment, that we should move into that realm. That what is this space in terms of its capacity to facilitate relationships between embodied consciousness?
I love it.
Yeah.
That's going to be cool. So, all right, I'm going to see if I can say it back, what you just said. So then we'll know if I understand. No, I'm not. Okay. In the context of relationship, how does the inner relationship of two embodied consciousnesses, their interaction, what does that say about relationship in the context of our fears of abandonment? And I'm paraphrasing now. Does that pretty close kind of some of that?
Yeah, it does. Fears of abandonment and pursuit of intimacy, maybe even, or friendship or relationship.
Yeah. And also talk about what is really intimacy, because people like to use it as a euphemism for just sex. And while sex can include intimacy, it isn't, they are not interchangeable. And intimacy can include sex. But intimacy is its own major, big, cool thing. So, all right. Cool. So then let's plan on doing that again. Thank you so much. You're the coolest, guy.
You're the coolest girl.
Yay! Okay. All right, everybody. We will see you next time. Oh, when are we going to do it? What's our schedule going to be?
At least once a week.
Okay, cool. All right. Talk to you guys later.
Bye, everybody.